This podcast is a proud member of the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network, and it's also proud to be from Texas. Get more at nerdylegion.com. Enjoy the show.
This is the 2BT podcast. Daddy, Dave,
and Steve are awesome.
Did that work?
So yeah, all that overtime is murder, but the money, the amount you can make in one day is good lord.
Oh yeah, like right now I'm like I said, right now I am getting ahead on everything. Everything. So that's good, especially with, you know, celebration looming. Oh, let me do an official celebration thing here. Yeah, because I haven't done one in a while, and I got my countdown thing, and I was thinking about looking at it earlier today, but it's kind of like torture. It's like, well, I can look at it, but I've still got a long way to go.
Yeah.
I just got to remember where the devil I put the app. Oh, there it is. Okay, here we go. We're opening the app. It's like Christmas, but a crappy Christmas because you still don't get to open the present yet. So here we go. Yeah. 8 months, 13 days, 15 hours, 36 minutes, and 15 seconds by my little thingamabob here. I wonder why the blasted music's not playing, man. That's upsetting. This thing's supposed to play music for me.
Yeah, I was waiting for that.
Ah, well.
Do you want me to hum something?
Yeah, I know it, man. Well, that's the...
Yeah.
There you go. That was good enough. That'll work. Yeah.
I'd rather have you singing than me. Everybody else would too.
Right? It's almost a given that I'm going to sing something at some point in time.
Yeah, it works. That'll 8 months sounds like a long time, but it'll be here before you know it, dude.
Oh God. Yeah. Oh God. Yeah. Especially with trying to, gather funds together and stuff like that, which, you know, won't be bad. Like, honestly, I could go ahead and get my airline ticket right now. But I'm trying to like hold off until, my other two friends are good to go and get theirs. But
yeah,
I'm just thinking about saying the devil with it and just going ahead and getting mine and giving them like what flight number and all like that, that I'm going to be on, and let them just kind of like play catch up or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. It's hard when you're, especially when you're traveling with people that aren't like, it's not like you're planning with your family or anything to do it. It's like other people have to make plans, and it might be one of those things you have to just like, okay, show up when you get there. We'll meet up at the place, you know?
Oh yeah. 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 And well, like my one friend, I've known her since kindergarten. We've gone through school like that long. Her name's Marianne. Actually Trisha knows her, your wife knows her.
Yeah.
But her and I both like agreed that we want to get there early. And what we'll do is because I don't know if a lot of people are aware of this, but like a lot of hotels have a place, like you can't usually check in until like 3 o'clock or something. Right. But a lot of hotels have a place where you can go and you can drop your luggage off with them. They'll give you a little check ticket type thing or whatever. And then you can go about do whatever you're going to do or whatever. I had to do that in Orlando because I got there at like 1 o'clock in the afternoon and my room wasn't ready yet. So they're like, oh yeah, you can just check your bag with us. And then, you know, they've got like a little room that they store it in for you. And then I took a little walkabout in Orlando the first day of a celebration last. Well, I guess it's the first day of celebration, but it was the first day I was there in Orlando last year for celebration. So, so I plan on getting there. The idea is I want to get there early, like around like 9 o'clock in the morning. So that way I can go hit either the Field Museum or the Museum of Science and Industry, because I've done this Museum of Science and Industry. Museum of Science and Industry is way cool. But I had to do like a whirlwind tour of the Field Museum. Like I was only there for maybe like 2 hours tops, you know, so that was like go in, run in, see Sue, and then run, go check out the lions, Zavo, and a few other things. And then it was just kind of like, okay, there's a few dinosaurs over here that I'm going to check out. And then I got to go. You know, but it's totally a cool experience. That's the reason why I want to go back and check out the Field Museum again. And of course, Marianne's never been to Chicago. So like she's been looking at pictures of the Museum of Science and Industry. So she's like geeking out hardcore, especially over the whole U-boat thing. Like, they have an actual German U-boat that was used in World War II inside the museum.
I've been in that U-boat once when I was a kid, and when I was a kid, I was quite a bit smaller than I am now, and it still felt tiny to me.
Oh yeah, 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 yeah. And you know me, dude. Like, I'm a large man, and I took the tour through that thing, and it was just, you know, I've flown on a B-17 and I've taken a tour through a U-boat, and I would not have fared well in World War II. Let's just put it that way. Like, you know, those guys weren't very large. Let's put it that way. You know, I couldn't even, like, whenever we were in flight on the B-17, I couldn't even stand up just because it was swaying so bad. And then like it's such cramped, confined quarters to begin with. You know, if I would have stood up, there's no way I could have stood, you know, fully erect. I would have had to been bent over at the waist or whatever. So I just basically stayed on my knees the entire time inside the B-17 while it was flying, you know.
Wow.
Yeah.
Those are like flying
targets. But it was, dude, it was a super cool experience, man. Flying in that thing is just like hearing the roar of the props and all like that. It was just, and you know, it's still set up the way that it was, you know, besides the dummy, you know, 30 cal guns and stuff like that and emplacements and stuff. But, you know, it's still exactly set up the way it was in World War II. So it, you know, there's no amenities in it whatsoever. We basically sat down in what was like a jump seat that was on the floor, and it had a seat belt that was like riveted to the frame. And then that was about it, you know? And, you know, they told people, you know, be careful going across the Bombay doors because those weren't set up to support, like, keep things in.
Yeah.
They weren't set up to keep things in, you know, like that was the whole point. If a bomb came loose, and actually that was like a, big hazard in World War II was the whole, a bomb not separating where they do the bombing run and doing, you know, where they drop the bombs, the bomb not separating from the rack. And it's staying in, and then whenever they touched down on the runway, it was enough of a jar to separate the bomb from it, and then boom, blow up on impact, and of course destroy the airplane and all like that. Yeah, I learned that from that book that I know I've talked about it on here before, that, by Stephen Ambrose, that Men and Boys Who Flew B-24s in World War II or whatever. It's called The Wild Blue, but it's got like a extra longer name to it or whatever, but yeah.
Are you a good traveler? Like the actual, like going places, I know you enjoy and you have a dream of like traveling to retire, but actually the process of like going through an airport and all, you know, finding your way to your hotel, does that annoy you or do you enjoy the process of that?
I kind of enjoy the process of it, man. Especially like getting to the airport. I like getting to the airport early. Like I know you and I have talked about it, but never on the show. But I enjoy watching people. And especially like at the airport, the airport's like one of the best places to people watch, man. So you can sit there and just kind of like wonder, okay, well, where's this person going? Are they going on business? Are they going on pleasure? Blah, 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 whatever. You know, and it's the only bad thing that I don't like about flying. Well, takeoff and landing. I don't know. Well, I know that there's a few people that like takeoff and landing. I personally hate takeoff and landing. And I actually have a ritual for takeoff and it's one of two things. Whenever you actually get out onto the runway and you can feel it because you start to hear the engines power, you know, throttle up and all like that. You start slowly rolling down the runway and, you know, one of the two things I'll either say is like, kick this pig or punch it, Chewy. You know, and so like, you know, usually, you know, it's like one of the two, man. So it's the ritual. And it keeps me safe, man. It's just like the ritual of like the bags. The bags, whenever I fly, I leave the tags on from the last flight. And, I guess because like I arrived safely at my last flight. So I leave the bags, the tags on from my last flight. And then whenever I go to check my bags, I let them cut the tags off because that's like, I don't know, like it's so superstitious and ritualistic. It's just ridiculous, but I feel like it keeps me safe. So therefore I keep doing it.
A takeoff and landing is oddly enough when I'm at my most peaceful on a plane. Cause it's like, okay, this might be it. So, and I'm good with, I'm like, okay, this might be it. So if I'm flying with my wife, I just hold her hand and it's like, okay, let's see how this works. You know, cause I had this thing where I was sick several years back and I was like, the doctors didn't know what the heck was wrong with me. And I was like, they always had this worried expression. I'm like, and I was like, oh God, there's something wrong with me. I'm going to die. And I'm like, okay, okay. If this is how I go out, this is how I'm going to go out. And I just like put myself at ease with it, like no stress. Like I still have fears of things like going in the ocean and sharks and stuff. I don't want to die that way. But if, you know, if I,
oh God, no,
but like a takeoff and landing, I said, whatever's going to happen, it's going to be quick. So I'm good.
Yeah. Oh yeah. 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 I don't know, man. Like takeoff and landing, like that's, those are the, like the two most scariest parts. Like whenever I get in the air, like I'm completely, totally fine. And I can tell you what it is about takeoff and landing that scares me is the fact of not being in control of the vehicle.
Yeah.
Like I don't even like riding with people that I don't know, you know, like if I'm going somewhere and there's a group of people and somebody that I don't know is driving, I will usually drive myself just because I don't know them and I don't like putting my safety, my life into their hands. And so therefore takeoff and landing, whenever you have the largest, you know, room for error, those are the parts that scare the hell out of me. But like whenever you get in the air, we all know that once they get in the air, they basically flip a few switches, goes into autopilot, and then, you know, Bob's your uncle. And next thing you know, you're at your destination or whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah. I had a takeoff at.
Oh, go ahead.
Oh yeah. Oh no. I'm right there with you, dude. I actually enjoy airports, man. And and to me, that's just part of the, like, experience of flying, you know, it's, or going somewhere, just the part of the experience of going somewhere. Like, I've never gone to a foreign country. I know you have. Oh, yeah. And so I don't know what it would be like to actually get to another country to where it's like a different language written on everything, you know, like that would totally probably freak me out just a little bit.
Some places, most places I've been, there's English or it's easy to figure out if not, like, but the weirdest thing was landing in Scotland. And there are machine guns standing there.
Holy that was crap.
Weird.
Yeah.
That was weird.
Yeah.
But yeah, traveling overseas, it's usually pretty not too stressful for the most part. But like three weeks ago, I missed when I took my daughter to the airport. She was flying to a thing for school. And then last week we missed because we had to go pick her up, but... Yeah, I just enjoy going into an airport. It's kind of like you just watching people. It's like, oh, what is this guy going on business? Oh, is he going to do a big business deal? Or is this somebody famous, like an athlete I should know? Or, you know, it's just fun. Or is this guy like a spy? You know? Yeah, it's fun stuff.
Yeah, you were talking about the airport in Scotland with the guys with machine guns, the armed guards and stuff like that. You know, I flew in November of 2001, you know, which is obviously right there after 9/11 and stuff. And that was whenever I was doing the music thing. We got flown out to L.A. to go do some stuff. And of course, they flew us like super cheap. And it was like America West Airlines. I don't even know if that airline is still around. I want to say it was like a subsidiary, like an offshoot of somebody. But their main port, it's kind of like Southwest is, you know, like if you take off. I know here in Texas, like if you fly on Southwest and you take off, you're basically going to go to Houston first and then you're going to go to everywhere else afterwards. Or that's how Southwest used to be. I don't know if they're still like that.
Her flight was on Southwest, and it flew straight to Baltimore.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, they've kind of made some changes. It used to be like that because they had to put restrictions on it because they fly out of Love Field, and DFW didn't want competition, so they had to make a deal so that they restricted what Southwest could do. But something happened in the last few years where they could expand.
Yeah, that I can't think of what the act was, but there's some act that was restricting them or
whatever. The right amendment, I believe.
Oh, yeah, that's what it was. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But anyways, we, you know, just going out to LA, like, especially at this point in time, because I just hate it. Like, I've gotten a lot more used to it now. Like, at that point in time, I hated flying. Absolutely hated flying. Was terrified of it. Just, it was everything in me and other people to get me on an airplane at that point in time. But of course, at that point in time, I'd maybe only taken like two or three trips somewhere that I had to fly. In fact, I think that was actually like my second trip that I ever took that I had to fly somewhere. And so like I was just terrified. I didn't want to do it. So we got to the airport. And like I said, this is back like in my music days or whatever. So we get to the airport and it's me and all my band members and we go to this Friday 2 or something like that. It's basically like Fridays, but it's inside the airport. So it's not like your normal Fridays. It's basically like a bar and then you could get like food at the bar also. And so we go into this Fridays and we got there, of course, early because they were telling everybody to get to the airport like 4 or 5 hours early because of the security checkpoints. Security checkpoints were ridiculous, man. Like absolutely ridiculous. So we get through security, we get inside, we go into this Fridays too, and we start drinking, you know, just like A, because that's what we did, but B, also to help calm me down.
Yeah.
And so I had like a couple of beers and I ordered like this Fridays mudslide thing or whatever. And they bring it to me and it's in like a freaking 1/2 gallon glass is what it looked like. It was like this giant, big goblet looking glass. It was like bigger than my head and it was like all this stuff in there and I drank the hell out of that thing and I got hammered, dude, absolutely hammered. So it's time for us to go get on our flight. So we go get on our flight. Well, we go to our gate. We wait there for about like maybe 10 minutes before we finally get the board. We start going down the jetway. And as we're going down the jetway, one of these armed guards pulled me to the side and decided to wand me down as we're going down the jetway. And I'm sitting there fighting just to stand up straight, you know, and everybody's freaking out. They're like, dude, just be still. Just be still. Just be still. Don't act hammered because if you're drunk, they might not let you on the plane and blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. So we fly out to LA, do the LA bit, go to come home. Well, we come home. And like I said, this carrier was a lot like what Southwest used to be like back in the day. If you were flying out of Love Field, you're going to have to stop it at Houston Hobby International. Well, so they would always stop in Phoenix, Arizona. Well, we had a layover in Phoenix and it was about like maybe an hour or something like that. So we take off at a LAX and it was the most ungodly, horrible takeoff I've ever had before in my entire life. We go about like 90 degrees. The pilot tipped his wing. We're like staring, like I remember looking down across from me, looking down across from me. We're probably about like almost like, I'd say probably like a 35 degree angle, you know, looking down across from me. Through the window, and all I could see was brown and blue and brown and blue and brown and blue as we like circled all the way up to our cruising altitude and then went to Phoenix. Well, we got to Phoenix. We decided to go. I was smoked cigarettes at that point in time. So we get to Phoenix. We decided to go outside and smoke a cigarette while we're waiting on our flight. So we go outside, smoke a cigarette. We hang out there for a few minutes. Walked back inside. That's the most of Phoenix I've ever seen, by the way. It was just a few cars as they drove by. That was it. Oh. But we go back inside, get back inside, and like they're telling everybody to take everything out of your pockets and put it in your carry-on and put your carry-on. Your carry-on goes through your metal detector. You know, the x-ray machine, sorry. And so I was like, all right, cool. And so I had a bunch of crap in my carry-on anyways, like, you know, cords, cables, picks, stuff like that. And so I take my carry-on, I set it up there, and I thought I had put everything in there. I put my cigarettes in there, put my lighter in there, put everything up there on it in my carry-on on the belt, and I step through the metal detector, and the metal detector goes off. I forgot I had a tin of cinnamon Altoids in my pocket, and the metal detector goes off, lights up like a Christmas tree, and just like bleep, bleep, bleep. I was like, what the hell? God. And I immediately knew what it was too, man. I stuck my hands in my pockets and dude, these guys freaked out. They're like, sir, get your hands out of your pockets. And I was like, dude, like chill. Like I've got a beard, but I'm just a kid from freaking, you know, Sanger, Texas. Like don't hurt me, man. Like I'm not going to do anything. I swear to God, I'm not a terrorist. I got a beard, but that's as far as I go, man. And I pull out the Altoids and I showed him. I was like, look, dude, that's all it was. I can step back through. They're like, no, sir, we need you to step over here. And I was like, what? And so they pulled me over to the side for like another like 30 minutes, almost missed my flight because they were like searching me, like scanning everything, you know, testing my shoes and all like this. Dude, it was just crazy. Absolutely crazy. That was my experience of flying right there after 2001, dude. It was just.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was almost enough to make you go like, I don't want to do this ever again. But now I'm like, it's a flight. I'm good. The only thing that sucks about it is there's no blasted leg room whatsoever.
Well, not for you especially. Well, that was a really stressful time anyhow. Even when we had the thing with the machine guns, that was 2007 when I got married for her honeymoon. And they were that worried about things there, you know.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah. Oh, it's, yeah. Travel's fun, though. I enjoy it. I mean, it's just like, I love just like going places anywhere. I wish, talk about how much I loved Anthony Bourdain, just living vicariously through him traveling the world was one of those things. I was like, God, I would love to do that. I would put up with all the annoyances of travel just to go places. So, I mean, it's like last weekend, we never don't have the kids at home. It's like every once in a while, our youngest goes over to grandma, like sometimes every 2 weeks. It's not necessarily that reliable. And, but we always have the oldest with us, and it's never like just me and my wife. And she was just really angsty. We had got rid of both of them that weekend, starting on Thursday, and I still had to work on Friday. And it's like, well, let's just go. We're just going to get it. So we just jumped in the car, and I had looked up some options, cheap options, because we didn't have any money to spend on really going anywhere. And we just drove. I said, let's go to, because she loves the ocean. The salt water and just being on the beach. And I said, I found this place. It's called Bolivar Peninsula. It's just north of Galveston. And it's kind of hard to get to, even though it's right there next to Houston and Galveston, because you have to go out into like towards the Beaumont area. You mentioned to me before about how you down in Orange, that area, it's a rural area, and getting to it. And it's kind of this long 27 mile stretch of peninsula that's just lawless. There's no go ahead.
I was just going to ask, did you go through Bridge City?
I don't remember seeing that name.
You would have known it because there's a giant bridge that like basically like, I can't think of what it is, the bay or harbor that goes up to Houston, because a lot of people don't realize that Houston's not really on the coast. Houston's a little bit inland, and they have to take like a channel or like a harbor into actual Houston from Galveston. And I think we went down, I'm trying to remember, like, I think we went down to Galveston or just to the edge of Houston and then shot across. And, you basically go through Bridge City, and there's a giant, there's a reason why it's Bridge City, because there's so many bridges. You're going over so much water, and there's one just giant bridge. And Steven used to be terrified of bridges when we were kids, and he was telling don't freak out, Mom, don't freak out.
Yeah, when you leave Houston, you're going to Galveston, you drive southeast, and it's Texas City's right there, and that's where you start hitting the bridges, and it's there. Yeah, there's a big one. We didn't go that route, though. We went in from the north, and hit the actual peninsula, and it's a really narrow stretch, and it's, like I said, 27 miles long, and you have to pay like $10 for a year pass, and you can drive on the beach. And not only can you just drive on the beach for 27 miles, you can just stay there on the beach camping out. And that's what we did. Yeah. We just set a tent up, found a spot where no one was there, and just set it up. It was awesome. And then you go across a ferry. It's like a 3 mile span, 3 or 4 miles between Bolivar Peninsula down by near Port Bolivar, which is one of the oldest forts in Texas, was there.
Okay.
And then you ride this ferry across, and it takes like sometimes anywhere from an hour to a 90 minute wait just to get across 4 miles to Galveston.
Oh, wow.
And then you're in Galveston and all that fun stuff. But it was pretty neat. Just getting away like that's fun sometimes. You never know what kind of, especially having no plans, that's sometimes the most fun, because anything could happen. you never know.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, dude. I was totally envious of y'all last weekend, man. Like, I was, like, whenever you sent the pictures of y'all being on the beach, I was like, oh, dude, that looks so awesome. I've been wanting to do that, and I've been thinking about just pulling up and going down to Corpus one weekend, just because I love Corpus, and there's a lot of stuff to do down there. And of course, it's the beginning of Padre Island, and it's North Padre Island. It's not South Padre Island, like where everybody likes to go party for spring break or whatever, but it's, you know, Corpus is still just, it's a great town, you know, and, you know, it's where Whataburger originated. So there's a ton of Whataburgers everywhere. So you're never going to be lacking for food because you've got a Whataburger just about in every corner. Oh, yeah. Yeah, man. Yeah, I've been.
Galveston's neat to me though, because it's very similar to New Orleans. If you've been down, like they have that area, it's called the Strand near the ship where the port is, where the cruise ships and everything dock. That's where a lot of cruise ships take off, is in Galveston.
Okay. And
you can go walk around down. It's, they call it the Strand there, but it, when we first went there, it's like, why does this seem so much like New Orleans? And it's because it's a, it was a coastal city and once was one of the most important ports in America up until a certain point in time. And so, yeah, and it had a lot of exchanges between culturally between, New Orleans and it. And, you know, you want to get some good Cajun food, you just go down to Galveston.
Yeah.
It's really, yeah, I mean, good stuff.
I mean, it makes sense because driving time, that's probably about like 4 hours from Galveston to New Orleans, maybe, or something like that. Like, it's just,
I don't know. It's probably not that far.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, probably talking maybe 200 miles. I doubt that it's a straight shot to get there. So it'd probably take you about like 4 hours driving time. But I mean, it would make sense that it had a lot of, you know, New Orleans feel / French influence on it just because the region that it's at, you know, and also being a coastal town, just like New Orleans is and stuff, you know, I could totally see that. That's pretty cool. I didn't have any idea about that though. That's, yeah. Learn something new every day.
Every once in a while you do. Right, yeah, it's a six hour. It's a six hour. It's 382 miles, 6 hour drive. Okay. So,
yeah, and that's to Galveston, or from Galveston to New Orleans.
Galveston to New Orleans.
Okay. Yeah. See, that's my problem with road trips and stuff like that. And like beforehand, like I never really cared about like what my time was that I'd get there in. But now if I'm driving and using like GPS, you know, Google Maps or something like that, it'll tell you it's like, you know, 3 hours and 19 minutes. And I'm like, all right, my time to beat is 3 hours then, you know, like it's like, this is a challenge. You have now thrown down the gauntlet, Google Maps, and we're going to try to see what we can do here. Let's go.
Yeah, you got to watch that Google Maps. They'll throw you off and sometimes it's kind of like that episode of The Office where Michael Scott and Dwight Dwight, I think, they're on a business call, and he just followed the GPS and drove right into a lake. I mean, we've not driven into a lake, but it's taken us to some weird places. Sometimes it's not updated just perfectly.
Oh, I know. Trust me. Yeah. Cause, you know, like I said, a couple of weeks ago, I went up to Northern Oklahoma, to go visit a friend of mine, and like the route that it had me take, like, it was so crazy, dude, because like here I am. It's like seriously, instead of like being on highway, it's like some like country road. And whenever I say country road, I'm saying like county road, where it's just got like a number. It doesn't have like an official name, you know, and it's like there's big fields on either side of me. And I come up to a stop sign. It's seriously a stop sign out in the middle of nowhere, man. And the crossroad, the road crossing it was a dirt road. And so I'm sitting here on this asphalt paved road. And there's a dirt road crossing, and I was like, man, is this where you come to like sell your soul to be an awesome guitar player? Like a guitar player? Like, damn it. I can't think of the guy's name, man. If I would, Robert Johnson.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was like, is this where you come to sell your soul to be an awesome blues guitarist? And I was like, so I stopped and sit there for a second. I didn't see anything. I was like, all right, I guess need to go.
I think you got to bury something in the intersection and await. Supposed to be there like at midnight or something. You did it all wrong, Dave.
Damn it, man.
That figures. So you can go back. You know where it is.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know if I want to go back. That sounds kind of creepy. Devil would be like, yeah, no, you suck. Like, no, we don't want you. Never mind. I might have done that for some Mavs tickets a long time ago anyway, so this is Mavericks playoff tickets.
Yeah, Dirk Nowitzki just signed. He's gonna after playing next year, he's gonna be he'll be the NBA player with the longest career with one team, beating out
21 Kobe. Years.
Yeah.
I think you're right, man. I think Kobe played for the Lakers for 20 years. I'm not 100% sure because I'm not a huge, in fact, I hate the Lakers. I'll just go out and say it. Like, I basically hate all NBA teams besides the Mavericks And I dig the Celtics, and that's about it. So, like, but yeah, I'm pretty competitive whenever it comes down to my sports teams or whatever. Yeah. But I think Kobe did play for I'm sure somebody's probably pulling out the hair screaming at us going like, no, it's 19 years or whatever. But yeah, I think it was 20 years that he played for the Lakers.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I saw an article about that.
Yeah. It's not like I don't have a smart device right here that I can just pull up and read, but you know, yeah, I would, but and I just pull it up and see that I got a text from my mom, so we're going to text my mom real fast.
Okay, hi, Mom.
Yeah, I'll tell her.
Can you read it? Is it like my mom? Says, do you need my mom? Go ahead.
Oh yeah, where you almost need an Enigma machine to decipher the code that she's texted you or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. It's, my mom sends texts, and I'm like, I try as politely as possible to say, what does this mean? It'll be like, you got you, the letter U. And I'm like, what does this mean? I don't know what you're doing, but
yeah,
step away
yeah,
from this texting.
Yeah, that's how hers usually are. Like she, in fact, this one asked me, she goes, do you need apples? We're in Sam's. It's like, no, I'm good. You gotta love mom though, man. Mom's always looking out for me. Like I said, she just texts me just then out of the blue, like, hey, I'm in Sam's. Do you need anything? It's like, yeah. You can't beat that, man. Can't beat that with a stick. So, but no, yeah, no, yeah, well,
middle baby.
I'm the middle. I'm yeah, maybe Amanda's the baby. Amanda's, you know, yeah. Like I always tell everybody, I was like, my little joke I like to tell people is like, you know, I'm the middle child. Steven's the older, is, you know, to those, listening out there in the internet land, Steven's the older brother. And then I have a younger sister named Amanda. And so I'm the middle child, which, you know, I've totally have got like middle child syndrome. Like I'm the only one. Well, I guess Steven has a tattoo now, but like for the longest, I was the only one that had a tattoo, had piercings. Kind of, I wouldn't necessarily say rebelled because I've always been like a pretty good person. You know, it's not like I've ever really broken any laws except for that one time I got a DWI back in 2004, which was, yeah, we're not going to go there because that was kind of like,
that's about a 30-40 minute story right there in itself.
Oh God. Yeah. Because I mean, like basically I just got kind of screwed, but you know, this is a saving grace moment, but, what was I talking about? Oh, yes. Middle child syndrome. I always joke around and tell people it's like, you know, I'm the middle child, but I don't have middle child syndrome. I know that my parents didn't love me enough, you know, like just kind of like, yeah, he's right. The middle child. Yeah. But you know, Amanda, she was the youngest and she was the only girl also. So therefore,
yeah,
you know, she, yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, sorry, we got on the tangent. We were talking about Mavericks, and then yeah. Your mom texts and derails everything. She gets your mom
gets the derailer medal this week.
She gets the derailer medal for the week.
You picked a fine time to leave me, Lucille.
You know, when I was a little kid, that was a song they would play on the radio or replay or something. I don't even know when it came out. Yeah. And I'd be at like your mom's house and they'd be playing that. I'm like, why are they singing a song about my aunt? I'm like, right, I was so naive and stupid. I'm like, why is that?
You know, it's kind of funny
what
because
did she do?
Like,
who did she leave?
Right. Like with four hungry children. Like whenever I was a kid though, I swear to God, it's kind of like, whenever I was a kid, I used to think he said with 400 children and a crop in the field. But it's kind of the same thing with, Feliz Navidad, you know, the song Feliz Navidad. Da, 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 Feliz. I used to think he was saying fleas on my dog. And I was like, why the hell is he singing about fleas on his dog, man? Like, I think I covered that around Christmas time though.
You could do a whole,
I can't remember,
long hour, probably about song lyrics, like Purple Haze. Excuse me while I kiss this guy.
with Purple Haze and Creedence, the there is a bad moon on the rise. Like those two, I never got confused. But I didn't really discover Jimi Hendrix till I was about like in high school or whatever. But like Creedence was one of those that was always there for me. Like those, that's one of those that was like my dad's Creedence, Black Sabbath, and Queen were like always in heavy rotation with us. And I came up with a theory the other day, and I'll actually toss it out to you because I was driving around. I'd just gotten off of work. It's Friday. It's actually just yesterday. It's Friday. And, I just gotten off work and I was listening to the classic rock station here in town. And, it was Queen's Bohemian Rhapsody came on, which looks like it's going to be an awesome movie, by the way. But Queen's Bohemian Rhapsody came on and like, I was just like, man, like, I love the band Queen, but like, you can't listen to Queen and be in a bad mood. I mean, just think about that for a second. Yeah. It's kind of hard to be in a bad mood while listening to Queen, you know? Even the one song where he's like, Jaws was never my scene and I don't like Star Wars. I say, you say black, I say white, you say wrong, I say right.
Yeah.
I'm trying to remember that song now.
That's a song. That's we will rock you. We will rock you. Yeah. I say it like that because that's what I've told you about how Delilah, she's music is everything and like, that's her thing. She'll come to the table and we'll be sitting there talking and she'll be like, okay, sing, we will rock you. And then she'll give us other words to put in the place of it. Instead of like, we will rock you, it'll be Lila, Lila's a good girl. And she'll do the beat on the table. She should be a drummer. Yeah.
That's awesome. Changed.
And then, and then one of my favorites is always that Another One Bites the Dust.
Oh yeah. Don't do, do.
I just love that bass line.
Oh yeah, dude. That's actually a pretty funky bass line, man. Like he gets down on that, man. Like that whole band was just full of like great musicians though, man. That's one band that I feel like we haven't really done justice here on 2BT because, oh, speaking of which, hey everybody, welcome to 2BT. I'm David.
Michael.
Yeah, there we go.
Steven. Steven had family stuff.
Steven's fired. Steven's fired again. Is you're fired again? I don't know. Queen. Yeah, I feel like we haven't really done them justice here on 2BT because we've never really brought them up before. There's
lots of bands. This Queen, I was thinking about bands from like the early 90s, like came on the radio the other day, that band, Tesla.
Oh yeah, man.
I don't know how you feel about, that's one of the, in my head, it's one of the most underappreciated bands because they were just good.
From singer
to everybody, all those songs they had, from Signs to, I can't name the songs, but whenever they're on the radio, I always want to go turn on my Apple Music or Amazon Music and find some more of their songs and just listen to it all day long.
Right.
Solid band.
And oh, Queen, dude, they like had some, the same way. Some really good guitar work in those songs too, man. Like, trying to think of their other stuff. Like, of course you brought up Signs and I'm trying to think of the other one that they did that was really, I mean, like the two that I can think of most notably is Signs. And then there's another one and I cannot think of the blast name of it. It's killing me, but it had like a really great guitar part.
Signs is the easiest one. Signs is the easiest one because, Love Song is another one.
Popular.
Love Song was great. What You Give, Modern Day Cowboy. Yeah.
Song
and Emotion, Changes. Yeah, Little Susie. They had a lot of good songs.
Yeah, they did, man. And also, today we talked right before we started recording. I had to work today. I've been working a lot of overtime, really, really, really been dragging me down. So that if I'm sounding like not up to 110% on energy level people, like that's the reason why I've been putting in a lot of hours, getting up really early. But like today, what makes it, you know, and we always talk about like, I'm able to listen to my headphones at work, which makes the day just fly by. And today I ran through, I finished, Leviathan Wakes The Expanse. I kept wanting to call it Ender's Game for some reason. Anyways, finished Leviathan Wakes of The Expanse. I almost called it Ender's Game again. And I was trying to think of something else to listen to. And so I started going back through Red Rising the other day whenever I was, making my way back through the Dresden Files. And so I still had that one on there. So I started listening to that, but I wasn't just really feeling it. Like I needed something to kind of get me moving. And, I was like, man, So I listened to some Queen and I was all like still on like the classic rock kick. And here's another one. And I've got a question for you also on this one as well. Okay. So I went to Pink Floyd.
Oh yeah.
You know, yeah. And that's just another like really, man, like that, you know, there's two albums of theirs that I can just take and put on and I've got on my, you know, my iPhone at all times. It's just good and ready to go. And, one is The Wall. Another one is Dark Side of the Moon. Mm-hmm. Now, yeah. me personally, my go-to album for Pink Floyd all the time is The Wall. And, you know, like I always say, like, you can kind of tell a lot about people. Like, it's kind of like the whole like AC/DC or Aerosmith thing, or, you know, I kind of got that from, Pulp Fiction, where she asks if, John Travolta is a Beatles guy or an Elvis guy. Like, you can tell a lot about people from whether they're a Beatles man or Elvis man. And so I kind of like vamped it and made it a little bit different and said, you know, are you an AC/DC man or are you a Aerosmith man? Which I like both bands, but I'd totally take AC/DC over Aerosmith. And same, it's kind of like the same. Yeah. Yeah, kind of like the same thing with Pink Floyd. Like, now me personally, like, if I'm going to listen to a Pink Floyd album, The Wall is going to be like my first choice. Granted, it's two disc album or whatever, or two record album, whatever. But I know like a lot of people also will frequently lean towards Dark Side of the Moon. I'm not discounting Dark Side of the Moon. Dark Side of the Moon is a great album, but me personally, I love The Wall. So, Michael, the question posed to you is, which do you usually gravitate towards, The Wall or Dark Side of the Moon?
I'd go towards The Wall most of the time. But you're leaving out another one, The Momentary Lapse of Reason, which is also a great one. And
oh, yeah. Yeah, I didn't even think about that one.
Two things about that. I'd agree with you. Yeah, of course. And this leads to a little story about how terrible of an English teacher I had in high school.
All right.
I'd say Dark Side of the Moon, I'd go towards The Wall first. But in high school, we had basically the kids took over the classroom.
And oh, yeah.
There's a handful of like two or three boys that were just out of control. And basically he would come to class. This poor guy, he literally went through the whole tack in the chair thing every single day. They'd find ways of hiding the tack. He finally just gave up and would just let, we'd played cards through most of the year in English, playing poker and just reading. And he'd bring in a TV and we watched The Wall over and over over in that classroom.
Yeah.
So maybe it wasn't a bad deal because we got the benefit of watching that repeatedly. But the second thing is, I brought up Wish You Were Here. And to me, that guitar in that, I guess some people can consider it a sad song, Wish You Were Here. And Paul has this theory that if you listen to sad music, you're just going to make yourself sad. I don't feel that way. I listen to Wish You Were Here, and just all I have to do is hear that guitar, and it automatically just brightens my day, makes me feel something in it, something in that guitar riffs they were playing and just plucking along. This beautiful, beautiful.
Oh God.
That might be my favorite song.
That's one of the things that, and it might've been the producer, but I don't know, like it, you know, Pink Floyd, like they're like true talent, like not only like experimenting with like different sounds and stuff like that with music, but like to me was the arrangement of their music and the orchestration that they did with it, man. Like it was just great. And like I said, some of the arrangement might be due to the producer that they're using and whatnot. You know, a good producer, a lot of times, you know, you'll go in with like a basis of a song and they'll be like, oh, well, hey, why don't you try this and do this and do this and do this? A lot of people don't realize that. A lot of times people think that a producer just sits behind the board and sits there and hits record and mixes and stuff like that or whatever. It's more like an engineer. Producer is really the guy that's going to be like, oh, well, hey, here's some ideas. Why don't you try this? Blah, blah, blah. Kind of like whenever Metallica started working with Bob Rock, you know?
Yeah.
Bob Rock, you know, he was known for, he was a famous producer at the time, but he's the guy who basically like put the Black Album together, you know? And a lot of people say one of their best albums. I'll say one of their best albums. I don't know how I got off on that tangent just then, so I'm just going to stop it right there.
What you're saying is just like the influence a producer would have on like a song like Wish You Were Here or something like that. And I see what you're saying because, you know, here, let's slow this down. Or maybe have you thought about not doing that? Yeah, that's influential.
Try playing that in a minor chord instead of a major chord and see what it sounds like. Yeah, yeah.
I like minor better. Minor. Right. Yeah, and the whole story about Syd Barrett is a sad one in itself. If you ever get a chance to see a documentary about them, there's one on Netflix I was watching, and his story is just sad. I mean, he was I've never seen that before. Yeah, you need to look it up because when they got their early success, he was the heart of that band.
Okay.
I mean, he was the front man, really. And, when he lost his mind, I remember hearing a story on an interview. Somebody was like, they were sharing a house or something when they were touring. And the dude walks into the kitchen to have breakfast and Syd Barrett's in there just sitting at the table having a conversation with a cereal box. Literally having a conversation with the cereal box. So yeah, that's what that song's about, is missing him.
Yeah.
When he lost it, he lost it big time. But I'm still sitting here waiting for my You Were Right moment. Like, you were right, Michael. I should have started The Expanse a month ago.
You're right, Michael. I should have started The Expanse a month ago. I should have.
Because I did do that with you with Red Rising, because I was like, put it off, and then I finally started Red Rising. And I was like, oh my God, I can't wait to read all of these.
Oh yeah, yeah, exactly.
And so what initial thoughts? You finished Leviathan Wakes.
I finished Any Leviathan Wakes. Thoughts? It's kind of funny because I got really into Miller. Miller was like my favorite character out of that book. And, I wanted to text you in the middle of the book about probably like my second day into reading it or whatever, listening to it, whatever you want to call it. I wanted to text you and be like, Miller's my favorite character, but I don't really want to get too attached to him because I feel like he's going to be the Ned Stark of the story, you know? And it's like, damn it. Yeah.
It's funny how that happens, right?
Oh yeah, exactly.
Well, the cliffhanger, it's a big cliffhanger because we don't want to spoil it too much, but he really sacrificed himself.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. And yeah, he definitely sacrificed himself. But
I loved him a lot. But yeah. And I think maybe over time, I think my favorite, and this is because I've gone through four books, my favorite now is Amos.
Oh yeah. I was going to tell you.
You learn more over time about all these characters. I was trying to tell my wife about that. We started the TV show. You're going to learn more about these people. They're not all jerks. There's reasons they're acting like this. And then the more you find out about them, the more you fall in love with them as a person. Amos is one of those. Yeah.
I was going to say Amos was one of my favorites there from the beginning. Just the fact that he, you know, is so profanity laced and, you know, whatever. Like, maybe it's because it reminds me of myself a lot because I have a bit of a foul mouth in real life. I try to clean it up for the internet or whatnot. But, you know, he just seems like he's an honest dude. And he just seems like he's a cool dude, man. And like, I will say with the TV show, I'm a little bit disappointed with how they've done him on the TV show. Like, he seems too hard nosed or whatever on the TV show. But
yeah, on the TV show, I think they showed something on the TV show that Naomi is his moral compass.
Yeah.
I think I get that better from the show.
Yeah.
Cause he doesn't have one. He would, if you cross him, he would just as soon kill you as anything. And that's not pretense or faking it. That's how he grew up.
Oh, you know? Okay. Yeah. Yeah, see, in the TV show, like, you don't really, in, you know, in the book, he's like, kind of like the, like, mechanic, like, badass dude that he just, you know, it's hard for me to explain really Amos the character, but like, yeah, him and Miller were like my two favorite characters out of the book. And then whenever I got into the, the TV series, first off, I loved the casting that they did for Miller. With Thomas Jane, the only disappointment that I have with it is that to me, they don't make him enough of an alcoholic in the TV show. And I know that's kind of like,
agree.
I think that's a bad thing to say, but like, man, you know, in the book, he is an alcoholic, like drawing himself down and, you know, becoming infatuated with this person that he's never even met.
No, I agree 100%. And in the book actually makes it, and the funny thing about the book, and maybe I just missed it, but when you start following his character, yeah, he drinks, but there's a point in the book where he realizes, oh no, you're a joke, dude. Because in his head, the way you're following his storyline, oh, he's still this great detective. Oh no, you're the joke no one wants to work with. That's why you're stuck with this earther.
Yeah. And that's, you know, it took his sergeant or captain or whoever to point that out to him or whatever. But after she points it out to him, it was kind of like the rude awakening. And you can honestly see in the book that he starts to like, well, he'll get drinks, but he won't drink it. He'll just have it sitting there. Like you can tell that he's trying to back off a little bit of it. And I think that the alcohol that he was, you know, that he was imbibing, you know, that he was being the alcoholic was kind of, playing to the infatuation, almost giving him hallucinations of, well, I won't say almost, spoiler alert, sorry, but he does have hallucinations about this person. Yeah. And, you know, I think that the alcohol played a big part into that. And plus part of me, granted, I haven't read the second book, but I'm trying to do this without spoiling any bit, but like the big mystery, I will say, in the book.
Yes.
I think part of it might have been sending him signals. I don't know if I'm right. I could be completely totally off, and I know that you're a few books ahead, so don't tell me if I'm right or if I'm wrong or anything like that.
I'm not gonna. That's an interesting opinion. I'm not gonna say anything yay or nay.
Yeah.
There are a lot of interesting things developing in this first book that you didn't see until, you don't see it happening until you get farther on.
Yeah.
And, yeah. I look forward to seeing your reaction to some things. I don't know. I just love it. They did such a good job with it, the storytelling, and the fact that they've actually literally been putting a book out per year is boggles my mind also. I guess it helps with two guys actually writing it. You're talking about casting. No, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, like, my only complaint about the book is that it seems like after the action on Eros, I can't think of the name, not series, but the other one that's like the Vegas planet, it seemed like that would have been a good stopping point for the book, but they continued on like another, like, seemed like 9 hours or whatever. But I mean, I'm not, don't get me wrong. I'm not complaining. That's, if I had to like pick a gripe, that would probably be the gripe, but yet I'm not complaining at all because I absolutely love the book. Go ahead.
I see what you mean. It could have been broken down into two more books.
Shorter
books. Yeah.
Yeah,
that makes sense.
But
casting wise, and I don't know if you did this, and I had for the Amos character, I had kind of a Vin Diesel looking guy.
Yeah,
kind of bald headed, muscled up. The guy they have is pretty good. Thomas Jane is good as Miller. I enjoy him, but in my head, and I can't remember the guy's name. Have you ever seen the Dresden Files TV show?
Yeah,
that guy is who I always pictured as Miller in my head while I was reading it.
You know, it's funny because I pictured somebody quite similar to that. And I will say him and Thomas Jane, I can't think of the guy's name that played Dresden in the Dresden Files TV show, but him and Thomas Jane do still have a little bit of similarities to their look a little bit. Like they have like sharp features as in like the chin and stuff like that to where, it's very, very similar. But I'm right there with you. I kind of pictured Miller like the actor that they had playing Dresden in the Dresden Files TV series.
And for some reason, I imagine the guy that plays Hopper in Stranger Things as Holden.
I don't know why. I got you.
He would have been good.
Yeah, they pretty much nailed. Like, I didn't really have... Holden kind of upset me at times with his character. Like, I'm not saying that I didn't really like him, but there's times where I really liked Holden and there's times where I got like really frustrated with Holden to where it was like, he's very set where he won't compromise in what he believes in or whatever and not try to see it from somebody else's point of view, you know?
And there's, people call them on it all the time because, hey, you're going to get, you could fairly get everybody killed on something that you might not, you might be wrong.
Yeah.
You don't know everything.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know,
like the way him and Miller
have like a love hate relationship with one another. Like and I don't mean like they both love to hate each other, but they love each other at one point in time and then they hate each other at another time and then they'll love each other at another time and then they'll hate each other at another time. And it just takes basically like Naomi being like the moral compass of Miller, you know, and the, not Miller, but Holden in the book almost, like, where she's like, well, look, man, you need to sit here and take a step back and look at it from his point of view. Here's what he is seeing, you know, blah, blah, blah. And then Miller, not Miller, Holden being the captain who seems like he should already be, you know, to be a good captain, I would figure that would be something that you need to do is also like, I mean, you need to be set in your ways. You need to have a good moral compass to be a captain, I would assume, but you also need to be able to evaluate and take in the situation as a whole and see like what is going on rather than just being like narrow-minded tunnel focused on this one thing and like, well, that's against my moral compass. So you're now a bad guy, you know?
Yeah. Well, I will say one thing and we've done a pretty good job of not spoiling things. So, the whole Miller thing, the way Holden treated Miller and turned his back on him, it also angered me.
It did, man.
I actually had to stop. You got to remember, this is a nine book or eight books now. It's going to be a ninth book coming out, and these people, they are evolving, and sometimes not for the better. I'll just give you some warning on that.
Oh, okay.
And one more spoiler, and everybody that hasn't wants to read this or watch the show, plug your ears for about 30 seconds. We're talking about cast, the characters you fall in love with. Remember Shed, the medic?
Oh, yeah.
My wife liked him initially. She's like, he's telling this line about how, that part's true. I faked my records because I was trying to get rid of a drug dealer. I'm not even a medic or something like that. And she said, I like this guy. And like 30 minutes later, his blood is spraying out of his neck and he's dead with a whole bullet went through the ship and took his whole head off.
Right.
I'm like, be careful who you end up liking in a show because they will kill everybody.
Oh, yeah. And I will say, that was one part that they, like, whatever they described it in the book, like, my imagination's great. Like, so when they described it in the book, like, I had like this whole, like, great visual because not only do they do a great job of giving descriptions of things or whatever, but like I will say Sci-Fi Channel knocked it out of the park with that because it was exactly basically how I envisioned it. And I was just like, wow, because he was a character that they had cast somebody in that role that I had seen many in quite a few different shows and movies and things like that. So I was kind of surprised that he was in such a, I'll call it a small part, even though it's not, as they say, there's no small parts, only small actors, you know. It was kind of like a short run part, basically. So I was kind of surprised to see him kind of, you know, them, because I thought with them casting that person, I can't think of the dude's name, but I thought with them casting that person that he would have a little bit longer of a run. And so I was like, oh, wow, they actually stuck to the book because they kind of like mashed things up a little bit. Like there's a character in there that you say doesn't show up until the second book or whatever, but that's fine. I mean, there's another book series that I'm kind of disappointed that I had kind of completely forgot about. The Last Kingdom that Netflix does a series on, and the series is great. The books are great. But you know, like there's the first book is a lot of whenever, you know, Uhtred is young and he's living with the Vikings or the Danes. And they basically like completely cut that out of the first season. And I was like, man, that's like, that part was great. Why'd you cut it out? But the Expanse, what's great about it is it seems like it's pretty much going, you know, beat for beat with some minor adjustments here and there, but they're not major minor adjustments to where I'm like, oh, okay, cool. Which got me thinking, you know, and we've talked about this, you know, we've talked about Red Rising multiple times and we even brought it up just a minute ago, but after seeing The Expanse done as a TV series, I want to see Red Rising done as a TV series. Just because I want there to be, I really want them to be able to delve deep into the book and into the story and really get in there to it. You know, cause I would love to, cause I'm afraid that, you know, if they were to do a movie, you know, you would have like they'd probably start with like the second book and have like the whole institute part and all like this be as like a flashback type scene or something like that. And to me, the character of Darrow grows so much within that institute area. But anyways, I digress. I kind of got us off on to that whenever we were talking about the expanse. You're right,
though. I think there's still, if you look, because I was looking up stuff about the series and Pierce Brown last week when I started re-listening to it too, and I think there's like stuff in the motion trying to get a TV series maybe done, and I think that'd be better. And back to the Expanse, I was, you know, I hadn't got to start watching the series after I'd already started reading the books.
Yeah.
In fact, I just started it this last week, but I was really sad. I saw that after three seasons they had got canceled by sci-fi. I was like, dang it. I'm really liking this book. I wanted to see the whole thing played out. And then Amazon, luckily, picked it up. So anybody that wants to watch the show and don't want to invest all the time in the book series, Amazon Prime, if you're a Prime member, you can watch it for virtually free. It's not a membership.
Yeah, if you're...
And they're going to keep doing it.
Yeah, that's that. And I'm stoked. I'm kind of more excited now that it's moving over to Amazon. Just because I feel like they'll have a little bit more free reign. Not saying that, like, you know, sci-fi kind of like constricted it any at all, but I'm just saying that, you know, like with it going to Prime, then they don't have to worry about, you know, censorship on national broadcasts and stuff like that or whatever, you know, because, you know, we all know that Sci-Fi Channel is, you know, it's, I'm not saying it's, you know, very peanut butter and jelly or very vanilla. I'm just saying that, like, you know, they can push more boundaries being on a streaming service like Prime or Netflix or something like that, to where it's like, well, I won't say that they'll make it rated R, but maybe a little hard PG-13 type thing or something like that.
Yeah, they can do that. And I was actually surprised some of the stuff that was in it content wise, but yeah, it's like you said, they can push it a little bit more.
Oh yeah.
I will give you one more. I'm really happy that you're enjoying it.
Yeah.
I think after you get more into it, even the next book, it's just, keep grabbing me back, wanting me to finish the whole series. Yeah. I'll say one thing about and it would be interesting to see it as a part of the TV show eventually. The third book, I believe it is, Abaddon's Gate.
Yeah.
I think that's the name of it. That has one of the, just sitting and, well, I was listening to it. I wasn't reading it, but listening to it, reading it, There's a set of scenes in that book that is more stressful and as horrific as just about anything I've ever had to see. And I actually had to like stop because I'm like, this is going really off the rails. I don't want to see what happens.
Yeah.
And they're really good at doing that. And it happens in the fourth book also.
Oh, wow.
Something happens. I'm like, oh my God. I just like have to pause it and just not listen to anything for a little while. But the third book is as close to a perfect horror sequence in it than you can imagine.
Awesome.
Yeah. Just as a heads up. Yeah. Good stuff, man.
Awesome. Can't wait.
Jeez.
Well, I think that's gonna do it for us today, man. But,
I think so.
Cause I gotta get up and start moving around and taking care of some of the stuff I haven't taken care of yet. Cause I got lazy whenever I got home from work this morning, afternoon, whatever time it was.
It's called being tired, man.
It is
working your butt off.
It is, but they're paying me a ridiculous amount of money to do it. So I'm okay with it right now. Cause, like I said, I'm ahead on all my bills and we got Star Wars Celebration coming up in 8 months. Woohoo!
Yep.
So if you're interested in The Expanse, or you're interested in Red Rising, or you're interested in The Dresden Files, three books that we brought up on this show, go by nerdylegion.com/audible. Go by, sign up, and tell them what they get, Mike.
Two free books.
Yeah.
And you don't have to keep the membership, but you can keep the books forever. And if you're like me and Dave, you got some time to listen to things. It's really had a big impact on my reading.
And
I love it.
You can you know, load it to your phone. They've got a sweet little app. You can just plug your phone into your car or sync it by Bluetooth or whatever it is, and you can listen to that on your drive to work. You can put in your headphones, listen to it while you're on the treadmill at the gym. You can walk your dog. You can listen to it. There's plenty of ways. So don't sit there and go like, oh, I just don't know if I have time to listen to a book, because you got time to listen to a book. Who needs to hear traffic reports? We all know we're going to be sitting in traffic anyways. just whatever. Also, while you're over at Nerdy Legion, stop by and check out the other podcasts, man. They're all great. They're all awesome dudes. Give them a download. Give them a listen. You'll dig it. I swear.
There's also a new podcast.
Oh.
That just started today.
Okay.
Called, Missouri Swagger. It's Missouri Swagger. And it's by Dennis Hopeless and Cullen Bunn, two, Missouri-based comic book, creators.
Oh, wow. That's cool.
That actually started out as a YouTube video that we have kind of, they're still doing that as a YouTube series, I believe, but they're also letting the audio get posted up on Nerdy Legion. It's entertaining. I've listened to the first one already. And one thing I've learned is Missouri Swagger is true. And if cool. you ever threaten Cullen Bunn to get, that you're going to fight him, he's going to punch you in the face. He will punch you in the face. He's not going to take that lightly.
Yeah.
So don't threaten that man.
Yeah, I don't want to threaten anybody. Like that's good. I'm a pussycat whenever it comes to that stuff, man. I don't want any confrontation. No. I'd rather have a beer with you and hang out than get punched in the face. I can tell you that much. But anyways.
No, they're good. Yes. It's all fun.
So check out Missouri Swagger. Check out those dudes. Just don't get punched in the face, Mom, because that would be bad. But if you do, take pictures of it and send it to us, because it'd be, I'd laugh. No, don't really. But.
Yeah.
Anyways, go by, Retro Reprise and check Adam out. He streams live every Friday, and then he puts all the stuff up on YouTube, I think on Saturday. So stop by and check him out. Dude, stop by and check us out. Send us emails. Hit us up on Twitter or even on Facebook. If you want to email us, go to 2btshow@gmail.com. That's the number 2btshow@gmail.com. Twitter, guess what? It's the same blasted thing. It's the number 2btshow. And of course that's at, but it's at the number 2btshow. I think that's going to do it. With that being said, I'm David.
I'm Michael.
2BT signing out. Bye, con Diaz.
Adios.
I was waiting on that extra.
I don't say goodbye. I say may the force be with you.
Awesome. Later, guys.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, heck yeah. I'm just rubbing all over my lips.
Use your mind. You don't use your body. Where do we go with this?
I don't know. But... Exactly. That's 2BT style as we go off the rails all the blasting time.
I don't know if I should say that.
Nope. Online. Nope. Yeah, you know.
Gonna get me in trouble.
Yeah, right. Like, these views are not shared by the team.
Good lord. What? What made me this way? It is hot. It is hot. So hot. Kind of like me. It is hot.
Yeah, I like fish sticks. I like putting fish sticks in my mouth.
What?
Fish sticks.
Good God. Oh. Something went wrong somewhere, or something went right somewhere.
Right.
There's a naked chicken there.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I used to love her, yeah. But I had to kill her. I used to love her. Oh, yeah, but I had to kill her.
I mean, well, I love you in all sense of the word, all of y'all. That's, that, man, whatever. I'm the jerk that wrote a million word prequel to the real story.
Dude, I like.
Too well.
I don't know my words.
I just like looking at the funny ones.
Do you know your words?
I don't know mine. You need to get
that whole alphabet thing confused. Right. No,
just do like I do. Give up. Just give up on everything. I don't care. The environment's dying. I don't care. Just give up.
Oh, my.
This is fun for anybody listening to this.
Oh, my God.
You gotta play to win, man.
I wanna make love to you, woman. I wanna lay you down by the fire. Caress your womanly body. Make it moan and perspire.
Yeah. Water rum.
Boom. I can either A, clinch it, and hope that my body just reabsorbs it. Maybe it'll turn into a burp.
Burp. Yeah. Burp, burp.
Are you ready for your vasectomy?
Mike, edit this out.
Yeah. I want to be captain of the committee that makes sure you guys don't F this up.
I swear to God, dude, it came out with a vengeance, too. I don't know. I don't know if like the...
it's glorious. Santa Claus is real.
Oh, well, look, he's not that bad of a dude.
Straight to the fart noises. There's only one day.
He's a little guy, red hair... that he likes to sing and play his lute.
I don't know, maybe it's my upbringing or something.
I don't know, it's just fun. I'm texting, be like, oh, well, you know, my feet are better than your feet.
And you're an old man and pretty much done.
There you go.
Yeah, dude. Everything's better with reverb.
Oh, yeah. Excellent.
Giant lump of wet dough. Okay.
Where are you from? When I was like, Texas.
Oh, whoa. Big guy. Well, how dare you say that to little Timothy?
Yeah.
By the way, spoilers.
Hey.
I guess it's the Texas thing.
I love my family.
Excellent.
Oh, you want to be a tough guy? I'll be a show what tough is.
Go home.
Dude, you mind if I sit over here? And he's like, dude, knock yourself out, man. Well, it must be a Texas thing. Don't do that, by the way.
I'm having a brain freeze. Oh, no. And I'm like,
Ujaba of the heebie-jeebies.
Face down in a gutter. Don't want to admit defeat, though.
Well, this is not good.
Like, dude, I love it. I love it all.
Whoa, dude. Oh, my God.
Star Wars guys are crazy.
My butt has a cannon.
If you're going to go out, that's the way to do it.
I dig it. It belongs in a museum. Oh, dude, hurry up and get here. Yeah.
Man in black fled across the desert, and the gunslinger followed.
The Last Jedi. Run DMC.
Han, Luke, Leia.
R2 and 3PO.
Rey, Finn.
Yoda, Kenobi.
Poe.
Do or do not, there is no try.
Chewbacca has to die.
The Palpatine.
Betray you.
Chewbacca. You know R.A. Salvatore.
This is a good guy, this is a bad guy. This is a good guy, this is a bad guy.
Go.
Dang it.
Like, crap, I'm just, like, stuttering and rambling there. Beans, a wonderful fruit. The more you eat, the more you toot. The more you toot, the better you feel, so eat beans with every meal. I have a belief that if the more you fart, the longer you'll live.
No! You don't stop playing because you get old.
Yeah.
You get old
because you stop playing.
That wasn't terrible.
That was pathetic. Ooh.
Nerdy Legion.
Nerdylegion.com.